Is this going to work?
Yeah, is this going to work? Did when, you push all when, the right buttons and stick all the right hoses in the right tubes?
Let me ask you this. When has it not worked?
Let's see. I don't even need a calculator.
Oh, wait. Actually, I do have to check to make sure it's online in.
Is it?
It is online in. Damn it. So good. I'm so smart.
Had you not checked it, it would have not been online in.
I don't know about that.
Worked. And then I would count three times of which it did not work.
Three. That's
three.
Right.
Three. One, two, five. Three, my lord. Three.
So we're drinking tonight.
We are drinking tonight.
And my wife is here, and my two cats, two of my three cats are here. Show tonight.
We've said that before, but this time we're serious.
We've said that before, but this time we are serious. And if you go up to the wiki page right now,
there is nothing.
There's nothing out there.
Nothing on the show notes.
Nothing out there. I would like to start with a correction and a comment. We got sort of the smackdown from Derek saying that, let's see. Did he agree with us or disagree with us? I can't really make this out.
No, he agreed with us, and then he made a big post about... Oh, no.
He sent an email.
Sort of disagreed with us about the fact that we said that big movie industries were nothing more than just a marketing machine.
That's right.
And he actually, the stuff he posted, I thought, somewhat proved the point that was true.
Oh.
He posted the site basically on monetary statistics and that sort of thing.
Yep.
And it was actually quite a complicated piece of posting there. We'll have to publish that out there because he had a link that basically broke down the movie industry and the different areas of it, independent filmmakers versus the big
industry filmmakers. Yeah, and let me read a quote. He says, I do agree with you, but studios are a little more than ad agencies. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Yes, that is a major factor, but they do also hold all financial responsibility of the film. That includes budget, insurance, bonding, marketing, processing, and distribution.
Right.
So he does have a good point.
And that's a pretty
good point. And that is a big deal. And really, when you think about it, it's sort of like a venture capitalist for a small company.
Yes.
That for every one... YouTube, there's 100 meta cafes.
Right.
Of these smaller websites that you say this one's going to hit big, the venture capitalists dump a bunch of money into it, and then they fold and nothing happens.
Right.
So
they're taking on.
So they are
a
taking on a
risk.
They are taking on some risk.
Right.
And that, you know, the higher the risk, the higher the payout.
Yeah, sure. That's the way it works in any business.
I think that what I have a problem with is that it seems to me, and maybe not all studios are doing this, maybe it's just the publicity of it, is that they seem to be working the system and working the financials so that people don't get their fair share. And that I have a problem with.
Yeah.
You know, it feels to me like... You know, not necessarily illegal, but potentially dishonest.
Right.
Of saying, Lord of the Rings made $100 billion from the box office, yet Steve Jackson doesn't get any money because, you know, the balance sheet.
Peter Jackson. Steve Jackson's the role playing.
That's right.
And he's not getting any money either, and that's bullshit.
That's right. Because the balance sheet says zero.
Right.
Well, that has a lot to do with some creative accounting.
Right.
Which, that's what I call bullshit.
Well, you know, they NPR had a quote from one of the guys from the picture studio and Peter Jackson. It was about 2 or 3 weeks ago I heard this. And, I mean, the the guy from the studio was like, Peter Jackson's a greedy, money-hungry bastard, and all he cares about is I want more money and I'm worth more money, and da-da-da-da. Made Peter Jackson out to be this money-grubbing whore, you know? And it was like, well, that seems a little bit kind of out of control. And then, of course, he had a statement from Peter Jackson, and he was like, look, you know, all I want is you to pay me what you told me you were going to pay me, and that's it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
exactly.
His quote was probably pretty simple and to the point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the guy from the studio was just going on and on and on about how horrible Peter Jackson was and what a money grubber he was and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. So I have kind of a... That's the issue I have with the studios. Not the fact that if they shook hands and said, we get half of what the movie makes... And they legitimately got half of what the movie makes, even though all they did was put up the money. Then that, to me, sounds fair. Peter Jackson shook... That's the agreed-upon deal. If Peter Jackson said, I'll take 5%, or if he said, you know, I'll do it for $10, and the movie company didn't give him the $10, it's the same idea. That's still bullshit.
Right.
Because they're breaking their agreement.
Right.
So.
Yep.
So anyway.
I'll have to say the most interesting thing I read in there.
Yes.
On the webpage that Derek sent us to was actually a line item that was specifically mentioned to cover all the bad things that go wrong in post-production. Like, I shot bad video. We got bad sound. And there was actually a line item for X amount of money spent
on bad shoots.
Fixing bad audio.
Right.
Fixing bad this. So they actually have a line item. I mean, it must be a thing. You know, I mean, we talk about it all the time, like, geez, maybe we don't have the experience required. We have these incidents where we get some bad audio or we do a video shoot and we get a series of bad video. And that happens to everybody, even the professionals.
Oh, yeah.
And you just account for
it. And I'm sure even more so.
Right.
You know,
so,
because we're not super picky.
Right. I just thought that was interesting because I didn't think about the fact that they have a line item for we fucked it up and now we got to fix it.
Yeah. The other thing that Derek mentioned I think the last episode we were talking about villains and that I felt that they're sort of overdoing it to some degree. With Spider-Man 3. Like, why introduce all these villains and why do all this stuff? He had a good point about Venom in that they're making some sort of metaphor about Peter's struggle between the good and evil and his internal struggle about what is his responsibility and when does he say fuck you and... So the Venom character is representative of that.
Right, but...
But it's a fucking Spider-Man movie.
We get that already.
Yeah.
He's been having that same conflict in the first two movies.
Well, and it's, to some degree, got to be resolved. I mean, and so how does it manifest itself?
But that's the thing. It's never going to be resolved because that conflict is always there, and without it, you don't have Spider-Man anymore.
But right, but how does... Like, with Mary, it appeared in Spider-Man 2 as Mary Jane.
Right.
And so it will appear in Spider-Man 3 as Venom.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
I have a tendency to think, you know, Indiana Jones never had any internal conflict about anything. He was like, I'm fucking getting the Ark. They're the bad guys. I'm the good guys. I'm gonna go get it. It's an adventure story.
Right. Yeah.
And so...
There was no need to that. I mean, he was the good, and then there was the evil.
Yeah.
It was very clear cut.
So I have a tendency that if I'm not trying to learn a lesson from a movie, and it's just a fun adventure movie, then just make it a fun adventure movie. Don't make... And Raimi's good at this, you know? He did Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Which was just a fun movie.
Right.
Didn't have any
hidden
meaning.
Certainly was not a moral to Army of Darkness.
Right. So,
hey,
don't give me a
baby!
That was pillow talk, baby.
That was just pillow talk, baby.
Okay. So, that was, we've posted, with permission, his email on the show notes. If anyone's interested in reading a more detailed conversation about that stuff. And there it is.
Sweet.
Thank you, Derek. We appreciate the email. We appreciate the inside insight as well, because as everyone knows, Derek is pursuing a career in filmmaking and has a lot of friends and acquaintances and whatnot, so...
And whatnot.
He has some more closer-to-the-truth information than we do in our various rants.
Right, because we just make this shit up.
We do, totally. Fucking love it. That's the best thing about having a podcast, you can just make shit up.
Right.
So, on to tech tips. The tech tip we have today is I finally posted my iPod script.
It's about damn time.
And I really like it. I'm a big fan of it. But I don't know if anybody else will be.
You put it up on Dig, too.
I put it up on Dig, and it got 3 digs.
Yes.
Me and 2 other people.
One of them was me.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, dude.
So what the script does is I hate the way iTunes manages my podcasts. So in the grouping tag on iTunes... I have no idea what the grouping tag is for, but I use the words keep and remove from iPod. Or remove.
I swear
iPod.
We talked about this.
No.
You sure?
Did we?
All right, keep going, just in case.
Now I'm kind of freaking out.
It's really it's important enough that maybe we could just restate.
Okay. Anyway, it's kind of nice because you can... you can keep the podcasts that you want on your computer and never delete them. I do that with Marshall Secrets, for example.
Right.
I listen to those 3 or 4 times. I have the Alan Watts podcast that I listen to probably 3 or 4 times, and I just want to keep them. I also have several that I want to keep on my computer but don't want on my iPod.
Right.
So those are tagged specifically to say, and actually they get transferred to the iPod and then deleted from the iPod.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of a hassle, but anyway, it's finally up there.
Sweet.
Go check it out if you're feeling in the mood and you're discouraged about your fun shit.
And I guess that sort of reminds me, just not knowing or not knowing whether or not we said something about that last time. It has been like 2 weeks now, I think, since we
It's been like
again.
2 or 3 weeks.
So, little update. We've been busy, opening our martial arts school,
yep.
which we are going to talk
about. Which we'll talk about later.
And Sterling finally found a job.
Yay! Good job.
Yeah, so I've been busy doing that, and that's kind
of... So now we can afford pop filters.
Right.
No.
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 Besides, even if we had those turned on, you'd forget to switch the switch, and then we wouldn't have any audio.
You know what?
Right. So anyway, my hope is to get back to the once a week here now that I have a real job and all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to kind of apologize a little bit for the fact that, I mean, that's important. I know when I go look at podcasts, if they kind of stop posting, I ditch them.
Well, I think it depends on what, because it depends on the way you get your podcasts. For example, I get all of mine through iTunes.
Right.
And so I have my list of feeds on iTunes. And I don't pay a whole lot of attention to them. Whoa.
Nice.
And when I get a new show, I get a new show, and that's awesome. And when I don't, I have so many that I don't really think about it.
Ah. See, so, I go through and look at the last posted date. And if the last posted date is like, if it's been 2 months or so and they haven't posted anything new, I delete it. I assume they've given it up. Because my time is so limited about what I can listen to, and I don't have enough time to get through all my podcasts, that I'm like, if you're not keeping your stuff up to date, I'm going to ditch you because somebody else probably has the information. So I go through and redefine what podcasts I want to listen to about once a month.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'll get all new podcasts now. So I got a
really?
Whole slew of new podcasts I'm listening to.
Wow,
now.
That's cool.
There are a few that I keep that I love, and,
right.
and I love them, A, because they always... have new content, you know, the Geeks On guys. Every once in a while, they'll miss a week like we do or so, or it'll be 2 weeks because they get busy. That's just the way life is. But, you know, I also understand as a listener, one of the things that keeps me coming back
is a regular schedule.
Yeah, regular schedule.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Hang on, let me pause this just for a second. All right.
So anyway. That's. I just wanted to, you know, talk about that a little bit. Yes. I know that sometimes people are be like, "What the fuck, man?"
And you know what?
And our forum traffic slows down when we regularly post. And, yep. You know, we get busy and we don't have a chance to check everybody's responses all the time.
So. And in all honesty, you know, one of the things I've been feeling, especially with the martial arts school opening up and things like that, that, you know, we get to the podcast when we can get to them.
Right.
And that this really can't be, we just can't make this too much of a priority because it's a hobby. And we're not making any money off of it, and it's just for fun. And when it stops being fun, we'll stop doing it.
Right.
So.
But it's still fun, 52 episodes in.
It's still fun, 52 episodes
That's right,
in.
Because this is episode 52.
Or so we think.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's
a little confusing. So we're going to move on to tech stuff?
We are. We're going to move on to tech stuff.
All right. Now, this is so weird because I get the sense that I've talked about this already.
Which?
A teen sues the record industry.
We did not talk about this.
Okay.
We talked about the record company suing people who were, you know, just kind of nobodies in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. And
well, this teenager has is counter-suing the record company for suing him.
Yeah, and I love it. I love the fact, too, that one of the reasons he sued, or one of the, they named 24 different things, I don't know what you call that, in a lawsuit. Oh no, the battery wore out.
No, it just goes to standby if I don't touch it.
One of the things that he's suing them for is for taking advantage of the courts or something like that. And it was,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was labeled a different way. There's some official term for when you basically are taking advantage of the fact that the courts don't know it all. And you know they don't know it all, so you fuck with them by making it sound like...
Oh.
Yeah, so, but there's 24 different counts.
Dude, if somebody could apply a class action lawsuit... That would be awesome.
Yeah, I know.
That would
be
awesome.
Hey, you know, I'm all for that. Anyway, so,
I feel pretty... That's really cool.
Well,
in that,
come on. I mean, this kid was 11 years old when the record company started to sue him.
Wow.
Fucking 11-year-old kid. If that doesn't make you an evil fucking bastard, I don't know what does.
No kidding.
All right? I mean, suing the kid and taking his family to court and doing all this stuff, it's like, look... The kid's 11 years old.
Yeah,
okay,
no
I understand
kidding.
That maybe he's pirated some stuff, but he's claiming that he never shared music on a shared thing. And he said, he actually said, I dare you to prove that I did.
That's
so
awesome.
So he's giving the record company the finger. And I hope he wins, man. I hope he kicks their ass.
Well, the thing is that even if he wins, he might win, a couple $100,000?
Well, he's going to do their
even
legal fees and all the minor stuff.
Right. And the record company's going to be like,
right,
a couple hundred grand, no big deal. But
it'll set a huge precedent.
It'll set a huge precedent.
And that's the important part.
Yes. So when they get me, I can countersue them for a couple $100,000.
Exactly.
Yes. Awesome.
Well, I think this relates kind of directly to what Steve Jobs went and did.
Yes.
Steve
we can
Jobs
talk about that.
Posted kind of an open letter to the music industry.
I was shocked, actually.
Saying, you need to get rid of the DRM.
Yes.
And his contention was, I believe, that, you know, look, people are going to pirate stuff anyway, first of all. But the stuff they're getting, the quality of the stuff they're pirating is shit. Compared to if you buy the real thing from the store and buy the high quality stuff. People aren't pirating, you know, HD quality items and then passing them around. That's not what happens.
I think the major point is that CDs have no DRM.
Right.
So how is it that the record companies can be saying, you know, we've lost a huge amount of revenue to piracy when CDs have no DRM?
Right.
So really, if people have been wanting, for example, you don't buy something from iTunes so that you can pass it around to your friends.
Right.
Because if you wanted something to pass around to your friends, you'd go and buy the CD.
Right.
It's easy enough to do.
Sure.
And in fact, even with the iTunes stuff, you can burn it and rip it.
Right.
And that breaks the DRM right there.
Yep.
So it's not like it's all that difficult to get around anyway.
Right.
So all this DRM stuff...
It's causing huge headaches, for one.
And it's causing huge headaches for the honest people.
Right.
For the dishonest people like me, I just don't buy my music from iTunes.
Right.
And so, you know, that I think is another issue that I have with, like, all the music and the movie piracy, is that these companies say all the time, well, we've had $4 billion in lost sales. Well, you might have someone that makes a copy of a DVD that they would have never bought.
Right.
So that's not really a lost sale.
Right.
Because that...
they would have never bought it to begin with.
Right. I mean, I know people with huge DVD collections, and I guarantee you their DVD collections would be 10% of what they are if they had to purchase all those DVDs.
Right. They just would not have bought them.
Right. So, yeah. Anyway, I was surprised about Jobs mostly because, you know, I was pretty convinced myself that the DRM helps to sell iPods. Because,
why? Why?
Well, because if I buy something from the Apple Store, I have to put it on an iPod.
Right.
So
that
if I've got
sucks though.
So if I've got, yeah, but it's great for Apple.
Well,
because if I've got a collection of $400 worth of music from Apple, and it's time to buy a new MP3 player, guess what I'm going to buy?
But
I'm going to buy an iPod.
Here's the problem. The problem is, how many other podcatchers have you found that are truly iPod compatible? I found none.
None.
Zero.
No, no. And
so
that's
what
right.
That means is it's harder to sell iPods because they have all this shit that you have to
how
have.
Many,
so
how
everything
many,
is specially prepared for
how many podcatchers have you found that are better than iTunes?
None. Only because I have an iPod. Because a lot of those podcatchers would be great. The only reason I don't like them and don't use them is because they won't work with my iPod.
I don't know.
The reason they won't work with my iPod is because the iPod has that DRM and you have to have a special format and you have to do all this stuff and yada, yada, yada. I'm just like, I just want to put the shit on my, on my iPod.
So, I was surprised by it because I thought for sure that Jobs would not go in that direction. And
probably the only thing I've ever liked Steve Jobs for.
The one thing I will call bullshit on is that the iTunes DRM right now is not an open standard.
No.
Like WMV, for example, the Microsoft DRM, they license.
Right.
So the Zune can work with many different players.
Yep.
And many different players. Media Player will work with many different portable devices.
Right.
Why couldn't Apple do the same thing? Why couldn't they just open up their DRM?
And there's where I think you get into the Steve Jobs ego.
Right, and I'm like,
Apple, and you only use Apple products with Apple products because nobody else is good enough.
One of the reasons they do that is because they don't want shit to break. Right? So one of the reasons that iTunes works so well with iPods is because Apple has total and 100% control over both of those things. If what happens is you start using another media player, God damn it, it keeps going on standby. You start using another media player with your iPod, and you know, boy, this doesn't work so well.
You're not going to blame the iPod.
You won't.
No, you're not. You blame the software.
No.
Your iPod is just a device.
I disagree. You won't.
Blame the software.
You won't because you're a software developer. A lot of people will
everybody else is dumb.
Okay, I'll give you that.
All right. So if I have a piece of software and it won't push items to my iPod,
you're like, this system's
like,
fucked up.
Why is this software not pushing shit to my iPod?
Let me ask you this. You put a brand new sweet-ass video card in your computer.
Yes.
And your video game doesn't work. What's stupid? The video game or the video card? Fucking busted.
I'd say something if I wasn't taking my beer.
Man, this is kind of fun when you're drinking.
However,
It
just so happens I have put a video card in my computer.
I like the word however.
and I blame both.
You know what?
It's one of those deals where this. Look, I've got two games. One works great with my video card. One does not. So what's broken? The video card or the game?
Right. Both.
Both?
Both.
Both.
One of the things.
But what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to play the game I can. I'm not going to spend money on the game I can't. I'm not going to buy a whole new computer just for a game.
Right.
Well, I mean, I might. Depends on the game.
One of the things I'd like to say is that I like the sound a pneumatic tube makes.
Okay.
Thump.
Okay.
Isn't that a good sound?
That's fine.
Yeah, that's a good sound.
Not sure what the point of that was, but all right. It's fine.
That was a transition into our next story about pneumatic tubes.
We're going to have to make that as a bumper.
No.
Thump.
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 No, that's not our next story.
What's our next story?
Our next story is about the Disclosure Project.
The SETI deal.
The SETI deal.
No, this is creepy.
So there's a really cool Google video, and it's not a cool Google video. It's just a cool thing that's in a cool video, or in a video. It's a cool thing in a video.
First of all, okay.
Holy shit.
Does everybody know what SETI is? SETI is the
Search for Extraterrestrial
Intelligence. I did not realize it was started by Stephen Hawking or his foundation.
It wasn't. It was
mentioned that in the video.
It was started by Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan. His foundation,
yes.
Right? Foundation,
yes.
Of Carl Sagan Foundation.
Yes.
Who knows? I don't know.
The CSF.
Okay. So
this is a lot more fun when you're drinking.
Totally. So what you do with SETI is, people have seen that, you can actually download a little application,
yes,
on your computer, and when your computer is idle, it takes it idle time and processes information and tries,
yes,
to find and communicate from outer space.
And so what the SETI Institute does, and especially SETI at home, they've got two programs. They've got two projects. One project is that they point it at likely candidates. Okay. Well, they pointed at stars that they know that planets are likely to be around.
Ah.
And they try to pick up signals from those specific stars.
Gotcha. Because I'm assuming they have limited resources. They can't cover the whole sky.
Right. What the other project does, and this is part of SETI at home, is they piggyback on other programs for radio telescopes.
Okay.
So all they do is, pretty much wherever the radio telescope points, they record the data. And then they push the data down to the SETI at home program, and millions of people process it. So it's kind of random,
right,
where the telescope is pointing at any given moment.
Gotcha.
And they're just trying to cover the entire sky.
Okay.
I don't know which one of the programs did this, but supposedly there is somebody fairly high at the institute, not like position wise,
not on weed or on crack.
Not on weed.
Well,
they're on weed. who has said that they have had several positive confirmed contacts of extraterrestrial signals. And that they have gotten external pressure to not make them public.
Wow.
And, I guess the disappointing thing is that...
I find that so hard to believe, though, because if they were getting external pressure to not make it public, they probably just would have disappeared.
That's,
yeah, but
probably
it's an entire
true
organization. So it's not like just one guy knows and you can make him disappear and then no one would know.
Although she might have a point, in that if they, for example...
Well, again, it's like, okay,
if the three of us knew something that the government really didn't want people to know, we may happen to be going somewhere together and die in a tragic car accident.
Well, right, but you have an entire organization, so you can't tell me, like, there's one guy sitting there that...
And from what I've heard, is that what the process is that when a signal is confirmed, they call five or six other telescopes around the world to point their telescopes at the signal.
Right.
So that they confirm it.
Right.
And then the next step is to call the press. They are not a government agency, so they don't call the government first.
Of course.
They call the press first.
Right.
So how the government would know But I don't know. I guess the government knows shit that they're not supposed to know anyway. Right. So,
well, my other thing is this. All right, they confirmed life on Mars at some point too, and end up being some microorganism or the fossil of a microorganism. You know, like a one cell something or other. So my thing is, okay, what is a confirmed signal? What does that mean? You send out a question.
No.
Are you there? And they got back a response that said yes.
No.
You know what I mean? The communication could be what? Well, they're getting some signal and...
The SETI, they have pretty strict standards, actually. What part of what it is it has to be a non-natural signal. So it can't be just something repetitive. If it's just something repeating, they thought pulsars were intelligent life, and they weren't.
Right.
So what they're probably looking for is something... relatively random. Cock smoker. Something relatively random. They also have this process where they will move the telescope away from the signal and then repoint the telescope towards the signal and expect to pick it back up again.
Right.
And then the last check is to call other telescopes around the planet
and say, "Can you get
this?" And say, "Can you get this?" Because to make sure it's not, you know,
sure,
trucker Billy Bob going, "Hey going, y'all,
breaker
19, I'm a UFO alien coming down to your planet.
Take me to your leader.
Take me to your leader there. Oh, I got a smoky on my tail." I got Morbo on my tail. Morbo is the news anchor from Futurama.
Oh.
So, they may be coming to enslave us all soon, I guess, is the moral of the story.
I read an article the other day that talked about travel over such huge distances by devices.
Ridiculously impossible.
And not only that, not only is it impossible to travel over those distances in a decent amount of time,
yeah,
but if you were to travel at the speed of light, the amount of destruction caused by a 1 ounce grain of dust to a spaceship would fucking tear the ship to shreds.
That's why you put a force field out in the front.
Dude.
Yeah.
Everybody knows we don't have force fields.
Everybody. Have you not seen an episode of Star Trek? They've got force fields.
I have.
Yeah.
Dude, and warp speed.
There you go. And warp speed.
And warp speed.
We're all good.
Warp well, but the difference is they don't actually move through space and time at the same time. They move from one point in time to another point in time. So that travel in the middle is non-existent.
You know, the Futurama reference now comes back around because I don't know how many people know this, but the spaceship in Futurama doesn't move through space.
Right. Where does it move?
It moves the universe around it.
Ah.
See?
Very nice.
Very nice.
Like Dune. In Dune, they fold space.
They fold space. That's right. It's like dough. And they make a space cake.
It's like universe dough.
Yes. A space cake. That'd be good.
Space cake.
Although I hear they're not very filling.
No.
Shall we move on?
I guess.
Okay. Boy, this isn't... I downloaded a really cool game called Open Arena.
I went and looked at the website.
Yeah, it's an open source first person shooter multiplayer online game.
Based on the Quake 3 engine or Quake yep. Arena engine.
Yeah, and it's fun.
Is it?
There we go.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Okay.
Okay.
Are we moving on here?
I was going to briefly. Yeah, we are. Unless
we're
you have something.
I don't have. Okay, wait. Let's run through the list here. Do we have Tekken Stein? We're on the movie stuff.
No. I got Tekken Stein stuff.
Oh, do you do?
I do.
Well, fucking go at it.
Feedburner is now actually tracking Google statistics for when your feeds are hit by Google Reader and Google something else.
Anyway, oh, really?
So Google linked into there to help Feedburner us. When you track statistics, anytime Google Reader hits your feed and that kind of thing, they track those. There's two specific Google.
Okay, that
statistics.
Doesn't make sense to me.
I'm just saying, it was right on their front page.
Because.
Go to feedburner.com. It's right on their front page, bitch.
Such a pain in the ass.
Well, hey, don't you be refuting me if you don't want to go look up the answer.
Refutation.
Don't question me. And Dan's typing. Clickety clickety clack clack clack.
Oh man, I typed in free burner.
What the hell is your problem?
I typed free burner. What is it again? Feed burner.
Feed burner.
Feedburner. Hello, our name is Feedburner. I just fucking typed in the URL. What do you think is going on? Blogs, feeds.
Look for
publisher buzz. If your Valentine has champagne taste, but you're on a sparkling grape juice budget, the wine offensive has got your back.
Just do a search for Google.
Nah. So,
I just wanted to point that out in case anybody uses Feedburner. Feedburner is a statistics tracking program for blogs and podcasts.
Now, the thing I sort of don't like about Feedburner is they take over your feed.
Right.
So what you do is you update your feed via Feedburner, and then they host your RSS feed.
Right.
The downside of it is that if Feedburner ever starts charging or they go out of business,
then you got to transfer your feed back off, and that's a pain in the dick.
Then you're boogered. You can't transfer anything. Because, for example, if somebody has a particular feed in iTunes and it's got a specific URL and you move the location of your feed, they just stop getting updates.
Yeah, you have to call them and say, you have to call them, don't you?
No. The user has the specific URL pointed at Feedburner.
Oh,
that's how they that's how they check to see if you have new episodes.
Yeah, if you move it off of Feedburner, have to reset their subscription to your new location.
That's right. So you may lose a lot of people when you shift your feed like that.
Well, and unfortunately, you know, tracking statistics for podcasts and blogs right now is
We've got about 9 listeners,
right,
on Feedburner still. So I don't know what's going on there, but
me either.
The way we've done it is our Feedburner account points to our RSS feed,
right,
which is sort of weird, but that's the way it works,
right. So maybe we have 9 times 9 listeners.
Well, if Feedburner went away, we would lose those 9 listeners. They'd just be gone. And they wouldn't, unless they went up to our website and resubscribed, they wouldn't know. And
Our website?
www.podzor.com. That's PODXOR. For those of you that aren't leet.
Right.
Yeah.
For those those 8 of 9 listeners we have that are not leet.
That's right. PODXOR.com. Visit it today. Couple things. Now that we're pushing the podzor.com, this is our advertising portion. Go up to Dig. Dig Podzor. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've got like 9 digs on Podzor.
Nice.
And 5 or 6 on martial arts stuff. Yet it says we only have 4. But if you go to view everyone that's dug us, we got a lot more than 4. I don't know what's up with that.
Those guys that dig don't know what the fuck they're doing.
That's true. Go leave a comment out on iTunes for us.
Oh, yeah. That'd be sweet.
Because we keep dancing into the top 20 of the martial arts podcast.
Ooh, do we?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I'm just determined to be KarateCast.
All right.
Yeah. Although, see, now I have to say that again in the martial arts portion of the podcast.
Right, because they may only see that.
Yeah.
Or you could just cut this part and paste it into there.
I could, yes.
Or we could just say it twice.
I'm going to edit the shit out of this one, dude.
Okay.
I'll edit that out, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'll be listening for the part where you edit that out.
What?
We're done with tech and science.
Let's
move on.
Okay. Moving on. tech and science. No, not on a tech and science, on the movie stuff.
Don't you ever bitch about me being weird when we drink doing the podcast.
Oh, this is good stuff, man. So what have you seen lately as far as movies go, Mr. Sterling?
Odd that you should ask that, Dan.
Is it?
It is.
Why?
In fact,
we're in the movie stuff section.
Because I saw Ghost Rider.
Did you really?
I did.
Was it anything like Casper?
No.
Because I didn't really like that movie.
No, it wasn't.
No.
No.
I thought it was going to be Nicolas Cage is Casper, the bike riding ghost.
No.
No.
No. That's coming out
in
2052.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yes.
I can't wait for
Summer.
It.
Summer. Look
Ooh,
for it.
I'll probably be dead by then.
Right. Maybe.
Damn it.
Actually, I was surprised.
Maybe I'll get an early copy of it on Pirate Bay.
There you go. I was actually a little bit hesitant about Ghost Rider.
Yeah, it looked really kind of cheesy.
They put the big names in, and I thought, man, are they going to do this just to kind of appease the public and make a bunch of money off the Ghost Rider icon?
I was like, Mr. Cage, what are you doing?
Yeah. And as funny as his head looks attached to his body, he did a very good job.
Really?
Yeah, he has a very small head.
Really?
Yes, his body looks extremely...
I've heard that.
extremely unproportional compared to the rest of his body.
Really?
It's very odd.
I think disproportionate was the word you're looking for.
Whatever. Unproportionate, disproportionate, the dis, whatever. Those prefixes all apply.
Okay.
I got that right? The
yes.
prefix.
So,
it was really good.
Was just a fun movie? It sort of looked like Spawn from the preview.
You gotta understand a little bit about Ghost Rider, and Ghost Rider, the comics apparently use the cheesy dialogue. I went with two people who are fans of Ghost Rider and who know some about his lore.
Okay.
They said the movie decently followed the lore. They took a few liberties, which they always do. You know, it's
but that's
happen.
Oh, you gotta give that to
it
me.
Was a fun movie. Oh, and I got one big word for all the guys. Boobies.
Oh, really?
Eva Mendes wore two or three different shirts, and they were all unbuttoned to practically her navel, and her boobs were spilling out. It was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boob spillage.
Yes. I mean, how do you beat that? The special effects were great. The storyline was a lot of fun. I enjoy an angels and demons type storyline.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Like I say, it reminded me a little bit of Spawn.
It was fun. It was much better than Spawn.
Was it really?
Way
now, see, I like Spawn.
Better than Spawn.
Really?
I hated Spawn.
Really?
Yes.
Come on.
Way better than Spawn, in my opinion.
Okay.
I liked the characters. They had some decent story. And apparently they did stick pretty close to the lore of Ghost Rider.
What about the... Is it a go to the theater or is it a DVD rental?
You can get away with the DVD rental if you have a big TV.
Okay.
The special effects are fun. No huge explosions or anything crazy that you have to see on the big screen.
Okay.
Except for Eva Mendes' boobs. I mean, those are impressive on the big screen. you're just not going to get the same factor from your DVD player. Right?
Okay.
So,
if you've got a nice system at home,
yes,
it'll be good to wait on DVD.
Right.
If not, maybe you want to go see it in the theater.
Yeah. But it was a really good movie. I'll give it a 17. That may be a little less if you're a hardcore Ghost Rider fan.
Yes.
If you just enjoy comic book stuff in general and a little bit of cheesy dialogue, which is kind of funny, I'm going to give it like a 17.5.
All right.
They did do the penitent stare, which a lot of people wondered about. Ghost Rider, one of Ghost Rider's main abilities is
he
will look
stare.
Into one of his victim's eyes and make them feel all the feelings their victims felt across their entire life as a criminal. And if it's a demon, apparently it sends them back to hell. And there were a couple of glitches in there where you were like, that doesn't really make sense. There are a few continuity problems that I thought were a little glaring. But it was a fun movie. Some of the stunts he does as a motorcycle driver, jumping over all the stuff.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Lots of fire. The special effects were great. His
fire
skull
is
head
good.
And his bicycle was... Bicycle.
His bicycle.
His fucking motorcycle, bitches.
That would be awesome.
Paddling around in a Ghost Rider banana seat with wide handlebars and tassels coming out the side.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's a good movie.
Good. Well, I have a couple rentals that I can review for this episode.
All right.
Let's see. My wife and I most recently saw Scanner Darkly.
Oh, how was it?
Which is the Keanu Reeves. It's got a lot of famous people in it.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
It was pretty good. And I think... I think it would have been... I actually think I would have enjoyed it more without the sort of animated effect.
It looked like they animated over...
Do you agree?
I disagree.
Oh, you disagree.
It looked like they animated over the people.
They shot the whole movie.
But it wasn't that great of a movie. What made it interesting was that it was an interesting new type of genre.
Huh.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
What was
the plot? The plot was that there is a... It's slightly futuristic, but not terribly futuristic. There's a new drug on the market that is sort of worse than any other drug we've ever had.
Of course.
And it has to do with this guy who is a undercover cop. And he starts to become addicted to the drug, and he kind of loses himself.
Becomes addicted because he's undercover.
Yeah. And he starts to lose himself in the addiction and the sort of... He's lost himself in the mix between him being addicted and taking the drug, and my fucking computer went to standby again.
Don't tell him the ending though, because that's
what
made the movie good.
Well, that reminds me a little bit. There was a live action movie with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Jason
Scott Lee,
the guy from Lost Boys.
Liam Neeson.
He was an undercover cop who did narcotics and
yes.
became addicted to drugs.
What was that one?
Yeah, I think that's not a new storyline.
No, but I'm just.
What was that one really fucked up movie where? The people had these chips or something, and they replayed the events of criminals to live the event of the criminal.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That was it. That was it. Thanks, dude. All right.
So
I think I will give it a 16.
Okay.
Slightly better than
slightly
average.
Slightly better than average.
Slightly better than average.
All right, that's good.
Jen?
Yeah.
She gave it an eh. Yeah.
Okay.
We also saw, what was that other rental? The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, how was that?
Which is kind of a chick flick.
Yeah, my wife's been dying to see that.
It's got funny parts to it. There are some funny parts and there are some life lessons and all that stuff, but it's not bad. It's a tolerable sit through the movie.
Your wife's out of the room,
wife.
To be honest.
It's not bad. It wasn't bad.
You are fucking lying.
Nope. It wasn't bad.
All right, good. What would you give it?
I'm a bit of a girl, so...
Well, I know that.
I'll give it a 16 as well.
Oh, okay. So
not,
slightly above
not
average.
Much original, but...
Some of those movies are fun when they gear them toward showing the fact that women are insane type thing. Some of those are...
Right.
Chick flicks with... Lilted
with
a little bit toward the
mild
man
insanity.
Yeah, I've seen
yes,
that before.
That's very true.
All right.
So, that's it for movie stuff. Do we have any movie making
tips?
Nope. Got nothing.
Movie making tip? I have a movie making tip.
You do?
Yes. My tip is this.
Yes.
Make movies.
Make movies. There you go.
There you go.
RPG stuff?
System, which is the collectible card game system for like DC and Marvel, and it's basically the superhero collectible card game.
Really?
There's several different, you know, there's a Batman one and a couple other ones. I bought the Batman one.
Oh.
There's my review.
Oh, burn.
After you play a game like Magic that's so involved.
Yeah.
That's so intricate, and
yeah.
I'm used to the system, and you're used to how the turns work, and the stack, and all these interesting, cool combinations you can pull off. And you get to in my opinion, a very simple-minded system like a Yu-Gi-Oh! Or the Versus system, and there was another card.
Or a Yu-Gi-Oh! Right.
You're like, it just doesn't hold a torch to a game like Magic.
Yeah.
All of the intricacies are the fun part about Magic.
Right. Right.
You know, when you take away all those different options you have,
it's
and all
just
the
not
different
fun
phases
anymore.
And turns, it's not a challenge enough. It's not cool enough. It's not strategic enough.
Yep.
You know, and I'm sorry, it just... I played one game on the base system just to do it. We played another game on there, and it wasn't even interesting enough for us to play a second game.
Wow.
It was like, fuck it. I mean, it's not even worth me exploring. I don't even see an idea for an option here.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was not good.
Wow.
It was not good. So I'm going to give that the old crapper.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, the art's great, don't get me wrong, and it was Batman, and Batman's fucking
Batman's cool.
But that's
part of the extra disappointment, too.
I'm going to give it 10.
10. Wow.
So it wasn't in the shitter,
right?
But it was well below average as far as the system is concerned.
Yeah,
the art was good. If you like the kind of art, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, that's a good RPG thing there.
Yeah.
Good deal. I have one video game stuff. I am in the motherfucking Halo 3 beta, baby. So I was one of the 13,333 players.
Holy shit.
That got in the phase 2 of the Halo 3 beta.
So have you been playing?
Not yet. It's not coming out until this spring.
Are they going to kick you out just for saying you're in the beta?
I checked the FAQ, and they have no NDA that you have to sign. No non-disclosure agreement.
What?
So you can do screenshots, you can talk about it all you want.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Nobody ever does that.
The other way to get in is that you can actually buy a special copy of Crackdown.
Right.
And they have the betas available in the special copy of Crackdown.
Ah.
I haven't heard anything about...
Foul Plant doesn't like that for the MMOs.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything about the Crackdown game itself, but my guess is it's going to be a Halo 3 beta for $60 with a free Crackdown game.
Right.
So I'm guessing.
Buy your way into beta now.
Yeah, I'm guessing. You know, yeah, it's cool because I was one of the 13,000 that didn't have to buy Crackdown.
Right.
But there's probably going to be close to 100,000 that are actually playing the game.
Yeah.
During the beta. Because they said one of the things they wanted to do is load test the system.
Sure.
So it's not like you've got to report bugs or anything like that. They just wanted to load test
it. So you're going to get some inside information?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I'm doing screenshots and the whole fucking bit.
Awesome. I can't wait.
And it looks really cool. And I am so geeked. And in fact, I'm still playing Halo 2 on my Xbox 360.
I know. You're a Halo freak,
nuts.
Man.
Nuts.
All right, I've got two pieces of information about video games.
All right.
One is Wii Sports 2 is coming out.
Oh.
Apparently, Wii Sports is probably one of the most successful Nintendo Wii
games. Heard that.
And people are just loving that
shit. I have heard that.
And everybody I've talked to who has one, they all say the game I play most is Wii Sports.
Yep.
So, Wii Sports 2 is coming out. Probably going to be a little more cleaned up.
Awesome.
And we talked about this a couple of times before about a massive online role-playing game for a console.
Yes.
Mythic Online has teamed up with EA. EA bought them out.
Okay.
And they are building Warhammer Online.
Whoa.
Right? It's supposed to be out Q4 this year. Looks fantastic. Mythic is hiring a console developer for a in-development program right now. So the rumor mill is running rampant that Mythic is going to be releasing, or at least at some point in the near future, putting Warhammer Online onto the consoles.
I think that the toughest sell that they would have is console gamers are a very specific breed.
Yep.
And so you're going to have a hard time telling console gamers that they have to buy a game for $60. And then they have to pay $10 a month for the MMO.
You'll be surprised. The number of people who are hardcore
diehard MMO players.
First-person shooter players who go to MMOs.
Yeah, but like for Halo, I don't pay anything per month.
No, you're right. You don't.
So,
but
I do pay.
Now,
I have to pay Xbox Live per
month. The deal. You're right.
So
here's
I'm
the deal.
Already paying my $10.
You've got 8 million people playing World of Warcraft.
True.
8 fucking million people.
That are more than willing to pay that $15.
There are people who will pay if the game is good enough.
That's true.
And the appeal of Warhammer Online is it's built around realm versus realm conflict. They're building it around PvP from the ground up.
Ah.
So far, there really have not been any games that... Well, there have been a couple. that are just not as successful as a game like Warhammer could be.
Right.
And Mythic did Dark Ages of Camelot, and they have a pretty good record. That was a great game. I played that before we moved to World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting.
Well, so and now, I think Phantasy Star...
Still a rumor, but...
Phantasy Star currently, I think, is the only persistent world
role-playing game. No, that and Final Fantasy XI.
Right. That's right.
And I heard they're okay games, but and there are some issues to be worked out, and who knows? Mythic may be trying to work on those, but you can't ignore the huge amount of console gamers that are out.
Oh, no.
And you're tapping into, you know, probably twice again the number of people and getting them interested in your game. And, and from the limited footage I've seen of some in-game play, I mean, it looks great. And the world is fun. And, I mean, that's the game I'm banking on to pull, pull me out of World of Warcraft.
Very cool.
So.
Well, let's move on to our final topic, which is martial arts stuff. And with the announcement of our final topic as being martial arts stuff... we welcome our martial arts stuff listeners.
Hello, martial arts listeners!
I now know where the martial arts stuff will start.
It's going to start at zero.
Because the equipment was torn asunder.
Yeah, in my harried departure to the bathroom.
Yes.
I accidentally kicked the cord out.
So,
Let's check this.
Check it, one, two, three. Check it, one, two, three.
No, it's supposed to be line or is that supposed to be money?
It's supposed to be line.
Is it still, did it get switched when I kicked it out?
I don't think so.
You want to check just to make sure?
Yeah, sure.
I can't tell. It's not my
light. Oh, yeah, that's still lying. We're there.
Okay, we're so.
So, martial arts stuff listeners.
Woo!
Let's give out our web address again. www.podzor.com, podxor.com for those that can't spell com.
In case you're taking one too many kicks to the head.
If, you know what? If you like the show, don't send us any money. Go up and put a comment up on iTunes.
Yes.
That's
comments are free.
Comments are free and easy to do.
Right.
Especially if you have iTunes and stuff.
Right. You can do it while you're listening to this podcast.
That's right. Unless you're in the car.
Well, then, you may have a mobile device and you can still do it while you're in there.
That's right. And if you do have a car, call. Say you're on the way to work.
All
right. Right? This is a good tip, too. Right? This is a life hack. Say you're on your way to work. And you need to remind yourself to do something when you get to work.
Yes.
Call your voicemail. Leave yourself a message.
Perfect.
Generally, you don't even have to listen to it when you get back to work. You just know what it is.
Right.
So if you're in the car, pick up your cell phone. Die horribly in an accident while you're talking.
Right.
Blame us. We'll be in the press. We'll get a lot of publicity.
There you go.
See?
It's like an E string.
It is.
That you tie around your finger.
An E string.
Right?
Yes, and a
string. You tie a string around your finger to remind yourself to do something. So you call your voicemail.
An E string.
It's like a digital string to tie around your finger.
Yes.
I just like the sound of E string.
I do too. okay, or dig us. Go out to dig.com.
Right.
Do a little searchy search for martial arts stuff or martial arts or Podzor. P-O-D-X-O-R.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so anybody who's still around can now listen to the actual content.
Hey, we don't ever advertise. So advertising for ourselves, I'm okay with.
That's true, we don't advertise.
And how far... See, we're really only 2 minutes into this show.
Right.
Without getting
Well, that's
any
2 minutes of their lives they'll never get back.
Yeah, that's a really long 2 minutes.
Is it? for those of you that are listening to the Martial Arts Stuff podcast, my wife is with us, who I don't think has been a part of the martial arts section
Correct.
Of our podcast.
And
before.
We've all been drinking.
And we've all been drinking. Yes, we have.
So you just never know what's going to happen.
You get alcohol.
Right.
This episode.
Right. Free alcohol.
Free alcohol. We'll
we can't it. Charge for it because that's
illegal. We'll pour it into the microphone and you can just suck on the speaker.
So we can
go. Yeah. Same time.
Beer.
So
what do we got on the agenda today?
What do we got? We got a couple things on the agenda today. I would like to make a specific mention of, I believe it's Paul, Paul and I, you mentioned Howard last week. I wanted to mention Paul this week.
Okay.
He is a part of the Karate Cafe gang.
Oh, cool.
He is starting his own school in Texas.
Oh, cool.
And I can't quite remember the name, but he's got a MySpace account. And, you know, if you want to find him and you're in Texas, listen to Karate Cafe. It's a good podcast anyway, and you can find him through there. And I believe he's on the KarateCafe.com website. So,
excellent.
He's a good guy, and we've been talking about insurance, and he's got the same deal as us. I think he's got the same deal as us, where he's renting a room from a studio, and you know, so we've been just chatting back and forth, and he's been real cool about all that stuff. So
very cool.
The other related thing I'd like to mention is Karate Cafe is back on the air. So for all of you podcast snobs who have deleted your feed because they didn't have an episode for 2 months.
Now you have to explain why you're saying that, because these guys may not listen.
Oh, that's right.
To the pod,
so Sterling and I had an extensive discussion about our infrequent podcasts, and that people may delete our feed because we only podcast once every 2 weeks or so.
Right.
Now,
lately,
right. And I never delete feeds because
you're a pack rat.
Because I'm a pack rat, and I don't bother to. If,
right.
You know.
That's true.
Yeah.
See, confirmed by the wife.
See, now this is my thing, right? I delete the ones I've listened to. So if the feed doesn't generate any more shows, then I don't have anything that's tying up my system because there are no more shows anyway.
But it still sits there, empty.
What?
Calling out, download me! So just get rid of it.
All right.
Got a clean house sometimes.
No, don't get rid of it.
Anyway, if you did get rid of it, get it back.
Get it back. Because it's a good show. It's really geared towards karate, Okinawan traditional karate. But they do talk about a lot of other stuff, and it's always a good show.
Cool.
So, that's it for the show today. No, we have two things. And I don't know, we have the a dojo diary update.
Yes.
And we have another topic that I called the scanning brain. And I don't know, which do you want to do first?
Let's do the scanning brain.
The scanning
first.
Brain. So I kind of got inspired by an Alan Watts podcast that I was listening to, and he's sort of a philosophical dude. And he was talking about how the human brain works. And generally, we are trained to scan our environment. Very rarely are people trained to sort of consume the general environment around them without focusing on a very particular thing. When you think about reading, for example, generally most people read line by line from left to right.
Right.
Not everybody.
Not everybody, but most people read that way.
Yep.
And so, even if you read sort of entire sentences at a time, you're still scanning from top to bottom of the page.
Right.
Unless you read the entire page at once, and then that's just cool.
Right.
So,
that's a learned skill. I mean, to,
oh yeah, for sure.
My friend Matt, when he reads books, he literally just looks at the page, flips it, looks at the page, flips it, looks at the page, flips it, and he can consume information through just a visual scan of the page, and he picks up the gist of everything. And he can read books super fast, and he knows everything that happened too. And you ask him questions, and he'll answer the questions. It's very odd. But that's a skill you can actually train yourself to do. You can learn how to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I was thinking about that idea and thinking about how it related to martial arts, and especially fighting and sparring, in that when it's very difficult when you're sparring with someone or fighting with someone to not focus your attention on one particular thing.
Yeah.
In that a lot of the training involves, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a general tendency to look at like around people's chest area so that I can kind of have an overall view of all of their weapons per se.
That is also,
and I very rarely sort of look them in the eyes. Because when you look somebody in the eyes, it's hard to see their feet.
It is.
So you've got to look a little... So you look center of mass.
And the eyes have a weird ability to kind of pull you into them.
And I know
and
some of the...
you don't want that.
Right.
You need to be more generally focused.
And some of the really, really good people, what they will do is they will look somewhere else. They'll look to the right and strike with their left.
Right.
Because they see you following their eyes. So... I know that some of the exercises that I've done in my class pass have sort of focused on that idea of situational awareness, I guess we could call it.
Right.
And when you think about it from a self-defense aspect, if you're walking to your car at night, and you're walking to your car, and you're looking at your car, and that's the only thing you're focused on while you're walking to your car, that's generally a bad idea.
That's a very bad idea.
So, again, it goes back to sort of retraining your brain a little bit to consume the entire area.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most interesting exercises that I learned when I was getting flying lessons so long ago,
yep,
is that when you look at your instruments when you're flying, at least this is what my instructor taught me, is a lot of people, especially when they're driving or something, they'll look at their instruments. If you want to know how fast you're going, you look down, you look at your gauge, you go, oh, I'm driving 70, and then you look back up.
Right.
And what my instructor taught me to do as a pilot is you look down and you look up. Then your brain processes what you saw without you staring at it.
Right.
So you have less time with your eyes away from the windscreen.
Yep.
And your brain can do this, and it's not really that tough because you have a mental picture of what that readout looked like, even though you're not looking at it.
That's why younger drivers typically... more insurance and more accident prone is because they haven't figured that part out yet.
Yeah.
Most people, as you get more experience, you realize that. You glance at things and that's it.
You glance at things and refocus right. Your attention. And so I would even say, you know, walking to your car at night, you can be sort of looking back and forth. And again, it's this halfway between, you know, you could say, well, I'm scanning back and forth. But what you're doing is you're trying to consume the entire space.
Right.
And so you scan back and forth, and you don't really stare at any one thing or keep your attention on anything.
It's not like you're going to miss your car. It's not going to be walking because I'm not staring at my car.
I walked right
by my car. How did it?
Well, and I think what is, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but I think the idea is that if there were someone standing in an alleyway ahead of you, or off to the side, and if you were sort of scanning your area, you wouldn't necessarily have to stare at that person to know they're there.
Right.
You would look. You could look away, and your mind would click afterwards to say, "Oh, you know what?
Something was there.
I just realized something was over there." And then you can maybe turn your focus towards it a little bit more. I think the same thing happens with sparring. In that what you don't want to do is go hand, foot, foot, hand, foot, foot.
Right.
Because
you establish a pattern first of all.
Well, yeah. But you can't, your brain can't scan that fast.
No.
You've got to just consume the whole thing. One of the exercises that two of them I thought that were interesting is this idea of the man in the middle. So you get one guy in the middle. You get a circle of people around him, which are the other students in the dojo. And essentially, they come at all angles. And what you have to do as the person in the middle is you have to pay attention to everything that's going on around you.
You can't stare at one particular person.
You can't stare at one particular person waiting for them to come at you because they're next.
Right.
Or whatever the case may be. And even when one person comes at you, you don't know what they're going to throw.
Right.
And back when I was in my Hapkido class, we did this blindfolded. And we did Chi-Na techniques based on I mean, obviously we didn't do strikes.
Right.
We did grabs. So someone would, you would be blindfolded and someone would come up and grab your shoulder or grab your arm or the your hair on the back of your head or something like that.
Right.
And you would have to instantly react to it. And a lot of times you can tell because a foot falls, and my instructor would always fake us out by stomping on the ground. And I remember one instance that was very disorienting for me is that we had a couple of women in the class, and I was in the middle, and he came up, and he was not a bigger guy, but he was pretty strong. He came up and hard clamped his hand onto my shoulder. And then as I was turning around, switched him out for her. So now all of a sudden, I've got to instantly adjust my reaction based on body weight and size and all that stuff. And that really freaked me out.
Yeah.
So I guess more than anything else, the topic that I wanted to just cover a little bit was that people should be thinking about that when they're sparring or when they're walking to their car. Is that situational awareness, whether it be in a self-defense situation walking to your car or whether it's sparring, is always a good thing to have.
Right.
Always a good thing to
have. Well, I think it's important that you be able to split your focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are all sorts of things. We have a thing that we've done forever. So ever since you and I have known each other, we've done this without really thinking about it. But we'll hang a heavy bag, and we took a piece pipe that we wrapped with the foam
the gloves.
Padding, and we put a little glove on the end, wrap it all on tape, and we hang it off the top of the heavy bag, and it kind of hangs down and out.
Yes.
And you have to focus on attacking the heavy bag while maintaining, you know,
some
a
focus.
Vigil about this weird kind of arm hanging off there, and the person who's holding the bag will spin the bag and whip that arm around. So you have to split your focus.
Yeah. Yep.
Because if you're just concentrating on the bag, you inevitably get whacked by this thing.
That's right. And we used to do an exercise where we drew a big square around the heavy bag and then split it up into four quadrants.
That's right.
And the one person, we numbered the quadrants 1 through 4. The one person would be hitting the heavy bag, and the other person would call out a number 1 through 4. And the person hitting the heavy bag would have to instantly shift into the quadrant of the number that the non-hitting person called.
Right.
So you'd have to be exercising and punching the bag and practicing good technique, but still have situational awareness to know which one you were on and where the one was that was called out.
Right.
And how to get to it.
Yep.
How to effectively get to it. So I guess that was a pretty good exercise for that as well.
Yeah. So I think that any exercise you do where you have to split your focus up helps in that because it forces you to concentrate on different things simultaneously.
Yeah. God, we had some good heavy bag workouts because the other one I remember was we drew concentric rings around the heavy bag.
Yeah.
And we'd have essentially a kicking, a punching, and infighting.
Right.
And we
trapping range.
And the non-heavy bag person would call out a range, and the person on the heavy bag would have to then move to that range. And it's a much different dynamic when you're in close from when you're out far.
Yes.
And you've got to have that awareness of where you are and how to get there and how to bridge that gap.
And actually, that's actually a really good martial arts tech tip, I guess.
Yeah.
Is... if you have a basement with a cement floor and you have a heavy bag section, get a piece of chalk.
Chalk it up.
Chalk the area up around your heavy bag for your drills. It works great, and you can always wash off later if you want to, but chalk's a pretty good way to do it. You don't have to worry about tape, and you can draw circles and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and it's, you know, the concentric rings, how they split your focus is that we made it so that our rules, quote-unquote, were that you had to stay in the ring.
Right.
So as far as splitting your focus, you had to hit the heavy bag and make sure it didn't knock into you. And at the same time, you had to stay in that ring.
Yep.
And when that ring, that smallest ring, was fucking small.
It was really small.
Yeah. So it's, again, you know, splitting up your awareness.
Right.
So that's kind of it. That's all I've got for that topic. You have anything else? Any other
exercises
or anything?
A good, I think that's a good thing to just be overall.
Be cognizant of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also, I forgot about this, I've been watching the World Combat League. Did I talk about this already?
You did.
The Chuck Norris World Combat League?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I remember.
It's pretty good.
We've talked about it a couple times.
Yeah,
but
it's hard to know. So anyway, it's pretty good. It's interesting. Go watch it. That's it.
The only other thing we have to talk about is the update for the school.
The dojo update.
Yes.
Let's see. Since we last talked, since last you saw our heroes, did we actually know? We had the place, and that was really about it.
Right.
Since then, we've had our first class, which went really well.
It went really well.
My wife was one of the students. We had two other friends in there. So no strangers yet, but it was a lot of fun what we did.
Yeah.
And
maybe Jen could talk a little bit about what she thought about the class.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Cool. I know that what Sterling and I, when we walked out of the class, one of the things that we were afraid of is we were like, man, that seemed like it was really boring.
Right. When I walked out, I thought, I hope they don't move too much faster.
Yeah.
For me, just getting my feet and hands working together, but I thought you had a really good mix of teaching and walking around and helping us. And
yeah. And I would say that's one of the things that is, in my opinion, a key part of teaching is that walking around.
Yeah.
Is you have to have somebody up front doing the demonstration. This is the way it should look. And you have to have one person walking around making those adjustments to people that are not translating the movements accurately.
And I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
I thought you had the perfect blend of repetition with breaks, moving on to something else.
Yep.
Because the repetition was enough to start to get it, but not so much that by the time we were moving on to something mm-hmm. else, I was sort of like, God damn it, I can't do it. And I was just getting sloppy.
Yeah.
So to move on, but then all of the movements kind of tied in together, and
yeah.
I thought it was good.
That actually worked better than I thought. I thought it was so smooth.
It really seemed like you guys have been teaching together forever.
Which is cool.
It was very smooth.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
And that's one of the things that we really focused on is essentially for the first class, we taught a midsection block and a strike.
Yep.
And moving with those same
motions.
Well, but
there were foot movements
and
just
that's
enough to keep it.
Pattern.
Yeah.
That's so. And I
also
I think
enough
that
to go home and practice. You
yeah.
know, more than one thing.
That's true.
I mean, if I was just practicing the block and strike, I do that for 5 minutes and then stop.
Right.
But I find myself, you know, walking around, like, stopping and turning.
Well, you know, and it's interesting is we don't think about it because we've been doing this stuff for years now.
Right.
But blocking and punching and
at the
moving
same time.
All at the same time and getting the body moving as
yeah.
one unit is very difficult
yeah.
to do. And what I found, too, is it's different based on your system.
Yes.
I mean, I knew how to block, move, and strike in Arnis. But when I got to San Yudo, it was different still. So
right.
I had to learn how to block, move, and strike all over again because we had different movements and there were subtleties that were there that I didn't know before.
Yep.
Well, and frankly, I think you guys don't even think about it so natural to you just to stand correctly.
Yes.
I would find myself getting all stiff and then hunching down too much and then standing up too much and then to find a balance to get comfortable in that. It's just such a small thing that is very natural for you guys but very new for a new student and it really helped to constantly have to get back into the stands and have you guys correct us, but not too much correction to where you get, you know, a little...
To where you feel like you're being picked on. Oh, I can't do anything right!
Frustrated.
Fuck you!
Right. I've noticed that one of the things that seems to help is actually two of the things, in my opinion, especially for our art, maybe not so much for like an Okinawan karate art, but is... telling the students, especially new students, to breathe.
Yeah.
Because...
That is huge for me. I'm not a good... I don't breathe correctly. I never have.
Well, and most people, when they get nervous or stressed out, they will hold their breath.
They actually
Every
hold
their breath.
Every
competition I've ever done, when I used to show horses, about the first round in the ring, I'd just about pass out.
Yep.
and then I would start to breathe. I just don't breathe well. So you guys would say that, and I'd be like,
"Oh." Yeah. Well, I honestly think breathing is the most essential.
Yeah.
And the easiest and the hardest thing
right.
to do. All
right.
at the same time. It's really odd. I mean, I have trouble breathing properly still to this day. I mean, it's one
you're
of those
focusing.
Things. Yeah, and to do it right. And I mean, this is very difficult to do, especially when you start thinking about it. You're like, God, it's just breathing. What's the big deal?
Yeah. The other thing that I think is a good idea is shaking your hands out. And a lot of students, especially new students, and depending on the school, they won't, quote-unquote, break rank. They won't break their technique.
Right.
If the whole school is doing a technique all in unison, all together, they won't stop doing their technique, shake their hands out, sort of loosen up, and then restart and join the group.
And I thought that was huge, too.
And
you guys did that a couple of times, because there were a couple of times I would find my hands getting... And it does kind of help
yeah.
to just kind of stop and kind of, like, shake things out. And
I encourage that.
It's like you reset.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
and maybe one of the things I think is also important to mention in the next class is we did have everybody counting, like, individually counting.
Yes.
And that sort of... establishes a deal where you feel like, oh God, we're on number 10, I gotta get it, I gotta,
right.
you know what I mean? Or I'm on number 5, I gotta catch up. And maybe we should mention that, look, if we stop and talk to you, it's okay, don't worry about that you're not on count
right.
at this point. If you're gonna skip two because we're showing you something or because you just need to relax for a second,
yep.
drop out, get yourself back in the game, and then pick up again. Don't
yep.
worry. And if you're doing your right side and they're on their left side at this point in time on this
no
count,
no big deal.
Don't, you know, we don't expect people to
right.
be in order, you know, we're not marching here. and that may be important to bring out because that one of the things, I mean, the counting is important because it gets people to be a little more confident.
Yes.
But we shouldn't do that to the detriment of them being able to be an individual as well.
Well, and I think there were two ideas behind the counting. And I stole that from my Wing Chun class, in that one, it gives me a better feel for how much we should do it. Because again, I counted to 10, and I thought to myself, maybe another 10 and that'll be good. But I had each of the three students also count to 10, so we did 40 repetitions, 20 on each side. And from what Jen has said is that that was a pretty good amount.
Yeah.
And that if I had done 20, maybe it wouldn't have been enough. And so when I have a certain pair of glasses that I see the world through, figuratively, both literally and figuratively, and those are not always the best. So it affords me to sort of go, okay, take it a little bit slower.
I would also imagine that for your new students that you don't know, will give you a chance to sort of see what their actual demeanor is, and so
yeah.
much if you have somebody and they maybe are kind of one of those quiet people that kind of fades into the background
yeah.
and they start counting. When I started counting, I was like, 1, 2.
Yeah.
And Sterling was like, no. You
yeah.
need to speak up.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, if you didn't know me at all, you might assume, okay, she's going to need to be pushed a little bit.
Right.
She's a little shy.
Right.
She's not
yeah.
speaking right out. And so then maybe you know the students that need the encouragement.
Right. Right.
Well, and I think, too, it's a really low barrier to entry of finding your voice.
Right.
If you ask someone who's shy to Kia, they're going to go, Kia.
Right.
Kia. It's gonna be mousy, and no matter how much you try and coax them into doing something like that, they just won't do it. But if you say, just count to 10 out loud,
right?
That's all you have to
you
do.
It makes you comfortable
since you're 4,
and everybody
it makes
else
you more comfortable
is yeah.
hearing your own voice
right.
in front of a group of strangers,
and everybody else is counting to 10, so it's not like you're not doing anything that anybody else is doing.
And not only that, interesting enough, and Jen, you pointed this out before, was. You're not then when you're counting, you're not just focusing on moving your arms and moving
right.
your
legs. Actually, it distracted
it
me enough.
Splits your focus.
I
splits
felt
your focus.
Like I was, yeah.
Yeah, and that's
yeah.
back to
it's
what we were talking
a little
about
more.
Before.
Yeah.
We got the flyers out, and I must say,
three of them were missing.
I did a good job on the flyers, and three of them were missing.
Three people took flyers!
We have no heat in the room.
Yeah.
We will soon.
He called today.
Okay.
And he said there's no heat in that room.
Oh, oh shit. I call bullshit on that.
I don't know.
I'll be glad to be the bitchy wife if you want me to and go talk to him. Because that is bullshit. It is way too cold in there. Your muscles can't relax. You can't get warm. You can't...
It's true.
That was the one thing during the class is I was having a hard time, like, settling down. Because I was just like, I'm cold. I need to bounce. Right. Like,
well, I talked to him about a space heater. So I think he might be putting
that's bullshit.
Space heater
there's a great big tube that goes in that room with vents on it.
I don't know.
That can't be just for decoration. I think he's.
I guess
he's totally trying to take advantage of you because he doesn't want to pay to heat that room.
Well,
I call bullshit.
We'll see. So yeah, I think the first class went well, and we're all looking forward to the second class and
yes,
moving on and just seeing where this goes. And I'm eagerly awaiting the first stranger that we get in class.
Yeah. Someone we don't know.
And the reason I think that that's a specific challenge to me is that, you know, the people that are in class right now, I'm relatively comfortable with. So there's more of a challenge with someone who's totally new to you and me and the system and everything is new.
Right.
And so, I don't know. It'll feel more official when we don't get people who just are coming because they feel sorry for us.
when we get non-sympathy students.
When we get non-sympathy students.
Yeah, I don't feel sorry for you guys.
So.
Yeah, and I think right now we do have a website.
SYDAA.com.
We are officially the Sanyando Athletic Association. Yep. And all we have up there right now is the flyer.
It is the flyer.
My brother went up there and looked, and he goes, do you have something with the maps a little clearer? And like, it's just a picture of the flyer. It's not.
Right.
It's coming.
It's meant as a placeholder because we just haven't had a chance to do that yet. So.
But we will. We will. And we're having fun in the meantime.
Yeah.
So that's got to be the primary reason that you do all this, because I've done the math on.
Oh yeah, I mean we're not
the
per
student thing, and
we're not doing.
I'm hoping to break even.
Yeah.
So.
And to be honest, I've never really. Yeah. I mean, that's my goal here is that the students are paying for the room fee.
I mean,
and above and beyond that, I don't care.
Don't get me wrong. Someday I would like a, 2,500 square foot Marshall University where I'm making $80,000 a year. But
right.
If that's your point when you're getting into it. I don't think you're going
to
be successful.
And it's funny because everybody, I've talked to a lot of people and they're like, oh, you know, can you make a lot of money doing that? And I'm like, no.
No.
No. And frankly, if the whole purpose of you wanting to run a martial arts school is to make money, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
I guess there are ways that you can. There's the quote unquote McDojos out there that sort of
right.
just bring people
well,
in and make
and
money
off
of it.
I'm not saying eventually you won't make money at it. I'm saying
right.
if the reason you are doing
right.
it.
You're
is akin
successful.
To well, I looked at starting a McDonald's and I looked at starting a dojo and I felt the dojo was going to be more you know, I was going to make more money than this. You know, it's not that kind of a decision,
then,
in my opinion. As,
not only
as
that,
an instructor of something like the martial arts.
Not only that, but there are easier ways to make money in the world.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and you're not, you know, potentially putting somebody's life on the line by telling them something that's not true or teaching them something that's bad. And when, you know, when the shit hits the fan. They do their technique, and lo and behold, they're dead.
Right.
Hello.
Yeah, that I think is actually that's the scary thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of
about teaching martial arts.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Is that if you give someone overconfidence,
right.
then that's a potential that they could really get hurt, and that's scary.
And there's the thing: it's like I want our students to be confident, and. Therein where it's like I'm confident that the stuff that I know and that we've learned
right.
and the way we teach that we can bring up some very good students who are very good at martial arts.
And it's that key, it's that balance between confidence and humility
yes.
that is so difficult to sort of to dance on that knife
right.
edge, you know.
Right.
And
when you have the confidence and no humility, all you have is ego.
Whoa, that's too philosophical
yeah,
for me.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
But I think you're also doing a good job blending that into your class, having them bow in
yeah.
to the room, having them bow to each other.
I think
being addressed by
yeah.
sensei instead of, hey, Dan, hey, Sterling.
Right.
I think that is really important.
Yep, and so do I.
I think it is, too. And you know what? To be honest, I was kind of like, I'll take it or leave it before we actually started doing the class. But
yeah.
as you were talking about it during the first class... and kind of maybe about a week before when you talked about it,
yep.
you talked about that, I really started thinking about it, and I the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that there's, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you listen to Karate Cast or not. Not Karate Cafe, but Karate Cast. Mm-hmm. They were talking about this idea of making absolute, having a lot of absolutes about how your students behave towards you as a teacher. And that it should be sir or ma'am or sensei, and it should be an almost religious relationship. And I really don't agree with that. I mean,
me either.
I think that especially when you walk outside of the dojo, you're back to being just people again.
Right. You got to be very careful. Do not, I am sorry, but you should not put your instructors on a pedestal.
No.
And if you're teaching your students to put you on a pedestal,
it's a bad thing.
Bad. Slap your hand. Bad.
Yeah. Because, you know, fighting the man is an important martial, you know, that's a martial thing. And so if you get into the habit of always putting people in authority sort of on a pedestal and not questioning them and never doing that kind of thing,
Yeah. That's
a dangerous thing to be teaching people. And it's in all honesty, as horrible as this sounds in my opinion, it's grossly un-American.
Yeah.
You know, one of the great things about living in this country is that we can question and ridicule
Right. Authority
without fear of retribution. And I expect that, you know, I would hope our students question us constantly in a respectful way.
Right, and that's the difference, is that.
I agree. I was going to say the same thing. I think that is the difference. I think that you're just teaching them humility, period. And part of humility is never feeling
Right. Like
you're better than somebody else, that you can treat them with less respect than you'd want to be treated.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
And two, it's like, you know, when I'm in class, you know, with Chuck.
Yeah.
When I'm in class, I call him sir.
Right.
When I
me
say
too.
Something or he me asks too. Questions, I say yes, sir.
Yes.
Da, 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 da. When we're outside of class, hey Chuck, how's it going, man?
Right.
Da, 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 da. We're all even.
Right.
You know, and in class, when I'm teaching classes at Chuck's and Chuck answers a question of mine, he calls me sir.
Right.
It's not the fact that I have a black belt. It's the fact that I'm leading
the class.
And so everybody's on even ground there. And I would fully expect at some point in time, our students would rise to the level where they could challenge us
Yeah. In
a martial setting and
Right. Be
a challenge for us. I would never want my students to always be like, no, I can't ever, you know, really fight
Right. Against
him and really want to win because he's my instructor Right. And he's better than me. I would never want that. I would fully expect that someday one of my students could probably take me.
Yep.
And I would freaking love the day that that happens.
I remember one of the biggest smiles I got out of any instructor is my Hapkido instructor when I was younger. I was like 16 or 17. And it was during my last testing, which was my assistant instructor test. And he said, you know, what do you hope to get out of, what do you want to do with your martial arts? I can't remember the exact phrasing of the question. And you know, he said, what do you hope to accomplish someday? And I said, I want to beat you. You know, and he got this big grin on his face because I think to a good teacher, that's really what you hope for.
Yes.
Is that you bring up students and you train students that, not, you know, beat you. I was young and I didn't really understand.
Right.
But
the spirit of what you said is there.
The spirit of it
is passion.
And
to see that your students are passionate about it and
Right. Not
just there to get a workout.
Right. And in all honesty, I would think that if one of our students, you know, ends up being a great forms martial artist and writes 3 books, that would be huge. I mean,
awesome.
They don't have to beat me in a fight.
Right.
Not that would be too difficult, but, you know, if they find themselves and if they advance the art and they,
that's
my version of beat me.
Right.
You know? So, anyway,
yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but
It's all good.
Guess I'm going straight into a dead end. I didn't see it coming. I was focused on other things.
Right.
So the school is going well, and we're eager to see her to have her second class, and I'm eager to, to.
I think we're going to have two more students.
We are.
Well,
Christina.
Christina,
yes.
And Cisco.
And Cisco and Ellie.
My wife will be joining us.
So we'll have
so
six
three.
Students.
Actually, three more students.
Ooh,
wow! We'll have six. It'll be a
wow.
That room was a lot smaller than I thought.
Yeah.
When people started moving around, I was like, oh boy, this is kind of a tiny room.
Right. We'll have to see how it goes.
We'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah. So.
Hopefully it'll go good.
All right.
So, anyway, thanks for listening. The website is podzor.com, podxor.com. And dig us and leave a comment on iTunes if you feel so inclined. I am Dan. I am the self... promoting fool.
Which in the tarot cards is actually the fool is a good one. So.
Is it?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Wow. There you go.
Do they have a self-promoting fool in the tarot cards?
No,
just
the
fool.
Okay. Because that would be very specific.
But the fool is a very positive card. So, yeah.
Very specific.
I'm Sterling and I get to go fix my bathroom sink.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, man.
That's awesome, dude. Just give it a karate chop.
Karate chop!
Honey?
Yes?
Gotta do an outro.
You're Jen.
You're Jen. And?
Bye.
Oh! I'm Jen and I don't know what to say.
That's, there you go!
There you go.
I know I was gonna be forced to participate.
Stop and save. Pew 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 p